You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I am your co-host, Armand Wakeup. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wakeup, A-R-M-O-N-D, wake up, all one word. More important than that, follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. You can get all of our previous episodes of Clock Radio Speakers at clockradiospeakers.com. We are on Instagram at CRS Podcast. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/clockradiospeakers. We are also on 4th District. Shout out to our friends at 4thdistrict.com. We are also on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Vote, rate, comment, share, tell a friend to tell a friend, and all that good stuff. And we're everywhere but SoundCloud, which Doc died, and then, you know,
they said they were dying, but then
our hero of the new Testament, Chance the Rapper, came and saved the day, right?
What's going on, everybody? SoundCloud is backed by venture capital, right? And so part of what they have to do is create the appearance that they are doing well to possibly attract more investment. So perception can be reality. And Chance has a vested interest in having a platform where he can put his stuff out for free as a way to make sure that he doesn't get trapped by, you know, the bigger that these streaming services get, right? He wants as many streaming services as possible, because when it comes time for his next project, he's going to want them to pony up some money, I'm sure.
Sure.
And so that, you know, the fewer streaming services you have, the harder that is.
Sure, sure. And as anti-streaming as many people claim to be, and I mean, it has its disadvantages. The money isn't as great as, you know, selling physical CDs. For independent artists, for people trying to build up their discography, it's a lifeline, because, you know, when you have something new come out, all of your old stuff is available as well. So your whole discography spikes every time you put out new music.
I mean, not even that. It's just, I mean, it's here. Like, there's nothing you can do about it. Like,
right.
It's not like there's going to be some magic twist where all of a sudden, you know, it's 1995 again.
I mean, we could go back to tapes and CDs. No? No? Okay.
No.
Speaking of tapes and CDs and streaming, sir. Did you check out, well, wait, hold on. Who are you, strange person?
Clockstradamus. No, it's,
kind of, yeah. One half
of the, WWE tag team champions, Clockstradamus. what's up, everybody? It's Doc. You can follow me on Twitter at @Doc_beats, not a Z, but like Armand said, just follow the show. So what were you saying?
So speaking of streaming, did you happen to catch, the HBO documentary, the Defiant Ones?
I did not.
Okay.
Is it good?
It was really good until it turned into an Apple commercial.
Because it's about Jimmy Iovine, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah. So about halfway into part four, part one was cool. Part two was good. Part three was great. And then part four was good as well. But then I was like, wait a minute. When I start thinking about, you know, I need to get my daughter a streaming service. You know, I'm putting her onto a lot of music. You know, maybe I should just get her Apple Music. Hey, wait a minute. That's when I knew it was a commercial.
You should just get her Apple Music.
That's what I was saying. That's what I was going
to
do.
I mean, you know, she's got to listen to Drake. Kids love the Drake.
Oh, boy. My daughter does not listen to much Drake.
I like how you qualified that. Can I add another qualifier? That you know of. No, just kidding.
Hey, don't do that. Don't do that. It hurts sometimes when I'm looking at her listening to music on YouTube, and I'm like, who are you listening to? And she tells me who she's listening to, and I'm like, oh my God. Ugh. And I'm like, well, do you know who so-and-so is? And she's like, no, who's that? Oh my God. She liked Smile, Jay-Z, which then allowed us to open up a door for me to play some Stevie Wonder for her. So
see, there you go.
You know, the gift that keeps on giving. But yeah, the Defiant Ones, really, really good. If you, Doc, you haven't checked it out, I highly suggest you and the First Lady of Clock Radio Speakers make some time and check that out. It's pretty good.
Now, I don't know if we talked about the show. I did check out the Bad Boy documentary. Did you check that out?
No, I haven't watched that yet. I plan on doing so on Monday. How was it?
I mean, how do you feel about a commercial for the legacy of Puff Daddy? Let's say it was roughly movie length. Hypothetically. honestly, the best part about it was watching. There's scenes where folks who haven't seen each other for a long time reunite. And that's great to watch.
Like Total and Jadakiss.
Yeah. Like all that. It's like, you know, it's like, man, we're old, but,
yeah,
but no, there it's okay. It's all right. It's not going to win any awards or anything, but it's fine.
Okay.
And you will get mad. I texted you just when I watched it. You will get mad because it takes all of 3 minutes for him to be at the doctor looking at the shoulder.
Right. I'm still mad at him for that.
Right.
And trash. Okay. So what's going on, man? We took a week off. I had to write a paper.
You had some midterms, right?
Yeah, I had midterms. Did all right, but you know, we still in the building. Grades are still looking great. So I'm straight. You know,
I was going to say, do you just start the conversation with, you know, you should really listen to my podcast. You could get a lot more like what I'm trying. You know, they could get an insight into your writing style.
I 100% referenced my podcast in my paper. My paper was about the benefits, because we had to basically we had this whole discussion about how Google is like the worst thing in the world because people now don't, you know, receive and process information the way that we did 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago. And there was an article that we were referencing in 2007, 2008 that was talking about how bad this is going to be and how it's going to basically be like detrimental to mankind. And so I wrote a piece sort of retorting that said there was benefits of the internet. And yeah. I referenced the fact that we have a podcast and we have the ability to, you know, reach thousands of people every week where I'm basically talking about whatever I want to with my friend. And people care. And that matters. We wouldn't have otherwise had it without the internet.
So, right.
You know what I'm saying? So shout out to our listeners.
So we took a week off. A lot of stuff has happened.
A whole lot. So this is going to be a catch-up episode, huh?
Yeah, so we got a lot of random stuff to talk about.
Let's do it.
We can start with your man Kyrie Irving.
Whew.
And
man.
Comic Sans Dan.
That's your man.
No, it's not my
I went to Detroit this weekend and saw the new Dan Gilbert Detroit.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Shake Shack and a Nike store and a trolley and a mix of Detroit police. I've never seen that many police out all the times I visit Detroit, and I go to Detroit a few times a year.
And he's got to make the suburban people feel safe.
Yeah. So it was like it was half his own private security, which made me raise my eyebrows a little bit. And half Detroit police. You know, it was whatever. But yeah, Kyrie said he wanted out.
He's decided he doesn't want to be second banana anymore.
Yeah.
The way now, you know, there's a lot of drama with how it's gone down.
Very much so. Some of that perpetuated by the media. The rumor is also was that LeBron's team are the people who leaked this information.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know. it's interesting. It's not like he is, you know, stuck on a bad team and he's like, get me out of here or anything like that. Or it's not even like his contract is coming up and he wants to define where he's going. He's 2 years on his contract. Granted, the uncertainty with LeBron is whatever, but
yeah,
I know that's a huge part of it, but also I think he's like, listen, I was number one pick, you know, Team USA, like all this stuff. He's like, I should be the man.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he, you know, this came out when, I mean, not that it's too late. It's just a lot harder. Like, you know, this, you know, if this is made clear to the Cavs front office, like say 2 days before the draft, well, all of a sudden that's a different conversation. People can get traded. Yeah. Free agency hasn't happened. Like, you'd have a lot more options. Yeah. Like, what's he going to do now? Huh? What's he going to do now? You know, I mean, like, Timberwolves, he's got Minnesota on his list. There's no way that he's going, like there's no trade that gets him there. No trade that gets him to San Antonio. Unless they want to, play Love and Aldridge at the same time. And they swap, like, there's no way to get him there. I mean, Miami, maybe, right? I mean, they could throw Dragic and whoever and whatever in the direction. That might be kind of interesting, but I don't know.
Yeah, people were saying that, like, New York and Cleveland does not like what they were willing to give up for Kyrie. And they would,
What do they have? Aside from, I mean, you know,
They got Melo, and Melo's already on, like, he's not in New York at all. So,
Do you, you think he'll be on the Cavs come opening day?
You know, what was really interesting was that the news that the Cavs were talking to Derrick Rose came out before the Kyrie stuff. So it was like, is Derrick Rose coming in to be a backup for Kyrie? And then the next day this leaked. I wouldn't be surprised if come October, Kyrie was here or was still in Cleveland. But I don't see him, given the circus that this has become, I don't see that happening. I think he's gone. But I don't know. I don't know where he goes.
Right.
He goes somewhere. He goes to the Washington Generals. He goes somewhere really, really way.
I mean, people have floated, like, if you can somehow loop in Phoenix, you know, Phoenix has Eric Bledsoe, who plays for, you know, he's represented by Clutch, which is the agency that LeBron's guy owns.
Mm.
Same agency that got Tristan Thompson his big ridiculous deal. Everybody sort of assumes that, like, it, you know, when you're dealing with a player from Clutch, you're sort of dealing with LeBron as well. So, you know, if you can, you know, maybe a, you know, multiple like party trade, you know, bring in New York in on it or whatever the case might be. But I've seen that floated too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's funny that this all happened with Kyrie because, like, I know, like, I don't know. I think Kevin Love could still work on the right team, but, like,
100%.
He's not working on that team. Not with LeBron and Tristan Thompson. And you know Tristan Thompson's not going anywhere. So I don't even, like, the whole Kyrie thing is, that's just a whole other added circus. I don't even know who, like, you know, Chauncey Billups turned him down. I don't know who will end up running that team. Aside from Comic Sans Dan himself, but, like, it's a mess. It could all fall apart. Like, you never want to count LeBron out, right? Like, you kind of feel any team with LeBron in the East should be favored. But I don't know. I could see things getting kind of ugly.
Yeah, totally.
Like, if the team is struggling, they haven't found the Kyrie trade yet, you know, they're like, you know, maybe only 5 games above 500 and it's like the All-Star break or something, like they're kind of underperforming. Like, it could get ugly.
Yep. I agree. And, that could drive LeBron out. I still feel like LeBron is going to leave.
I think he will.
This will expedite that process.
I think he will. I don't think he wants anything to do with Comic Sans Dan. I think he,
yeah,
you know, returning, getting the championship, bringing the 3 straight finals, his legacy in Cleveland should be fine.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, I'm guessing as far as he's concerned, after this season, the last time he wants to deal with Comic Sans Dan is when they hang his jersey in the rafters, you know?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I don't think that
it'll be LeBron James Stadium in 2035.
That relationship will never be fully repaired.
No. It's done.
Right.
It's done. Yeah. Dan is too ego driven. And
so was LeBron. You know, I mean,
I was saying LeBron's super ego driven. I was going to say and a smidge passive aggressive.
That he is.
So.
All right, man. Anything else NBA?
Nah, man. Let's keep moving. We got a lot to talk about.
Oh, man. We could totally switch gear. I mean, at some point we got to talk about just a really unfortunate situation.
Which one? Because there's a couple of unfortunate situations that have gone on this week.
America 2017, ladies and gentlemen. We got to talk about your boy Robert Kelly.
Let's do it. Let's just get out of the way.
So there was an article on, but actually I need to look at the exact article. So there was an article that came out on BuzzFeed. Was that last week or the week before?
I believe it was last Monday because we were trying to make an episode work.
Right.
Last week. So out Monday.
Came out last Monday. Huge article on BuzzFeed, which even though it's BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed News sort of they do pretty serious investigative like reporting. Like they're legit.
Obviously, judging by this article.
Right. And so, you know, it alleges that R. Kelly is running a quote unquote cult where basically he's holding women against their will in various houses around the country. And this is based off of report. This is based off of testimony or whatever from 3 former members of R. Kelly's sort of inner circle, as BuzzFeed puts it. Some of these allegations have sort of circulated before, but not quite in this manner and put together like this and not as comprehensive as this. Other women have come forward after this article was posted. I don't want to, the nitty gritty of this is, it's awful, but I want to ask you this. Have we all reached, by we all meaning sort of like society or even just the culture, has it reached the point with R. Kelly where he's just going to be like persona non grata, like he's going to reach Bill Cosby status where it's like, there's so many accusations, there's so much smoke that everyone's just like, yeah, that's it, you're done. No more tours, no more whatever. Like, are we reaching that point with R. Kelly?
Yeah, and unfortunately, why I feel like it's because he's not putting out any music.
So you think if he had a hit record, this wouldn't matter?
Yeah, unfortunately. That's not well, but I mean, look at Chris Brown. Though Chris Brown his career took a super hit, because when the Rihanna domestic violence incident came out, he was on his way to being like a pop star.
Yeah, Chris Brown took a permanent hit.
He did take a permanent hit, but his career isn't over.
No, it's not over.
Yeah, he just finished going on tour. Pretty much 40% of the records you hear on urban radio have him on the hook. So his career took a permanent hit. He has a ceiling that he will never pass.
That's right.
But he's still able to take care of himself financially.
Yes.
Bill Cosby, for a lot of people. And I mean, Bill never got convicted of anything, right?
I got to look that up.
Because I remember the video of him coming out the courtroom and he let out a hey, hey. let me get this one joke off.
Terrible.
Yeah, I'm terrible. I'm back, though.
The most recent case, the jury deadlocked. There was a mistrial.
There you go. So, but regardless of whatever the court says, the court of public opinion has him as a greasy, perverted slimeball, and that's just who he's going to be. Now, Bill Cosby's a little different because Bill Cosby hasn't really been active in a long time.
Right.
So for many people, Bill Cosby just represents, you know, father figure, stable home, you know, a lot, successful black families. Like, he represents a lot. And so people aren't bummed out for Bill Cosby as much as they're bummed out about what he represents to a lot of people. R. Kelly, on the other hand, is still consistently putting out music.
He's in a different stage in his career.
He's in a different, oh, 100%, 100%. I know a few years ago, he came out to Columbus. He was supposed to headline a festival we have out here called Fashion Meets Music. And now I'm trying to think of what was that called? A petition was created and enough signatures were put to get him kicked off of the bill.
Mm.
So he's definitely losing money, but, you know, you turn on the Tom Joyner Morning Show, you're still going to hear R. Kelly. So at this point, it's weird. It's a duality where, like, people know that R. Kelly is sick and crazy and nasty, but I bet if he put out a dope record, there would be some sect of people who would boondox it and say, well, it's R. Kelly. It's a dope record.
I think that might be true. I don't know. I think, much like Chris Brown, just isn't going to go mainstream anymore. Like, people know, yep, who he is, and his records, as you pointed out, will do well on urban radio, but, like, there is a limit to his career at this point. And, yep, R. Kelly was already mostly in that limited space anyway. Like, yeah, he has sort of faded from mainstream, like, stardom. You know, people know who R. Kelly is, and, you know, he still shows up on television and, you know, touring and doing all that, but it's not quite the same. But, yeah, I don't know, a part of me thinks, like, we just have a different awareness and a different... There's frankly just a different, like, cultural tolerance and expectations for this sort of stuff now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, it's kind of crazy now. Like, when you, like, people who weren't really paying attention to music, like, on a nerd level, or who weren't old enough to really know what was, like, pay attention to what was going on, like, to explain to those people that R. Kelly was married to a teenage Aaliyah in 1994 and put out an album called Age Ain't Nothing But a Number.
Yep.
Right? When you explain that now in 2017, people look at you like you have three heads.
Yep.
That would be completely impossible now, no matter how dope it is. Completely, yep, impossible.
Yep.
So,
and the record was super successful.
Right. It would not happen.
Not at all.
No. So part of this is just that, like, America has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And people's, you know, it's not always, I mean, clearly there are other events going on in the world where you could tell, like, progress isn't always smooth or even a straight line, right? But there are just cultural norms that have shifted where people just used to look at that, number one, differently. There was always, I mean, look, R. Kelly is not the first famous musician to, you know, have a reported, you know, thing for underage women.
Right.
Right. He's not the first famous man.
100%.
Right. He was just completely blatant about it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, there have been so many stories about R. Kelly.
Yeah.
That all are on various parts of what you might call, like, a sexual deviancy / scummy. I'm not trying to use those interchangeably, but that are on some sort of, for a lot of people, they all get kind of cloudy and kind of blended in, right? People remember the P tape and they kind of, but that's kind of related. That's a power, like a power deviancy thing related to this story a little bit, right? It's the same idea. People, if you remember the Aaliyah thing, oh, well, there was that. And then, you know, and then, oh, he put out the Jigga Kelly, not guilty, da, 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 you know, like this, the whole like craziness of R. Kelly starts to kind of blend together and you kind of forget how much is really out there.
Mm-hmm.
Not to compare him to Trump, but it's almost like a Trump-like effect where every day, and we might talk about Trump in a second, every day there is something new and shocking and crazy about Trump. You lose track of it all. And that's the president, right? And you should think that you'd be able to keep track of what the president is doing. R. Kelly, people don't keep track of nearly as much. So accusation here, this weird thing here, da-da-da here. If you're not trying to think about it all in one sitting, it doesn't feel the same way. You know, when you read this stuff laid out in these comprehensive articles, or when you read people who are advocating for, you know, what are purported victims, but frankly, there are so many reports that you almost have, you cross over into like, this is almost statistically impossible to all be fake. And you start like, and people who are advocating for those victims, and it's like, it's like a shot in the gut almost, you know, and you reevaluate your own like perspective as a fan. I mean, we did a R. Kelly definitive 15 earlier this year.
It's the first thing I thought about when the article came out.
And so this is where like how we think about R. Kelly, like his career as well, right? Not like going forth, right? The more that these sorts of articles are out there, the harder it will be for him going forth. Mm-hmm. But how do we, you know, looking back, like I've been ranting and raving for a while now, like when you look back, do you feel a certain way? Does this change at all? Like, how you look back at R. Kelly's career, or like,
I mean, honestly, I haven't listened to R. Kelly music for entertainment and enjoyment since The Chocolate Factory.
Right.
So I was already like cool off of it. You know, I'm good. I've been good for a while. So when you hear this, it's just like, I'm thinking my thing, and you know, one consistent thing that I always do with the show is we kind of put situations in silos where we treat this person in this situation as this thing. But as you said before, there are many celebrities, people in positions of power, and I mean, even our neighbors and coworkers who have these, for lack of a better term, fetishes. The only difference between R. Kelly and them is that R. Kelly sold a couple million records and we found out about it. You know what I'm saying? So I think I'm more than anything, it's like working in mental health and seeing these things makes me say, because I remember an article that he had or an interview that he had, where he has this really weird relationship with his mother, where his mother was almost like his girlfriend. So he already has a relationship with women or a perspective of women that is already, for lack of a better term, skewed. Like, he's sick.
Mm.
He's sick. You know, so yeah, he's a monster. And, you know, if first of all, another thing, if you're a parent, why are you bringing your child, your 20-year-old child, who I'm based off of the woman who came out for TMZ and made the video, wink, wink, that said that she was all right and she wasn't being held against her will. There's a certain type of woman, especially in the realm of R&B. A lot of these R&B chicks look alike. So very petite, light skin, big hair, long hair, whatever, whatever. And you bring her to R. Kelly and tell her, make my daughter a star? Is there no discernment? Is there no, maybe? I wouldn't even take, like, I don't even want my daughter to hear R. Kelly music, let alone be in the same building or vicinity as him. So there also has to be some blame on the other side. Like, if you are shopping your child, it probably wouldn't be wise to bring them around R. Kelly and say, help her with my career. Eh.
There was somebody in the BuzzFeed article where they were like, I thought I could protect my kid. And it was like, they went in knowing that, like, can't leave him alone, but R. Kelly might have a connect. It's like, come on.
Might have a connect, but your daughter's 20. These aren't underage women that we're talking about. So this isn't Sparkle's niece. This isn't a 15-year-old that was in the tape. So this isn't somebody who lives under your roof. And if they do, and they're 20, there's a good chance that they have their own life. They're not dependent on you for everything that they would be if they were 15. So yeah, he's going to get their number and they're going to have conversations that are under your nose. Why wouldn't he?
Right.
What would convince you that wouldn't happen? Because he came out with a song that said, "Heaven, I need a hug." Anybody out there willing to embrace a thug? You embrace the thug. And look what happened.
Well, I'm not trying to blame.
I
have a real problem with that.
With what?
That felt perilously close to blaming the victim.
No. At the end, I'm not blaming the victim, but I am saying that this person is in their 20s.
Yeah.
And so this isn't like a 11-year-old or a 9-year-old or even a 15-year-old. When you're 20, you have some level of cognizance of what you're doing. Now, looking back, us being in our early 30s, like, you think about how you were when you were 19, 20, 21. You're like, oh, my God, you're stupid. But at the same time, there has to be some responsibility placed on everybody. Like, R. Kelly can't manipulate you and do what this article says that he did if you don't even place yourself in that situation to begin with. They sought out every story. Both stories in that article were the same thing. The children or the parents brought their children to him.
Right.
So I'm not calling it blame, but I am saying that there's some responsibility there. Absolutely. Why wouldn't there be?
On the parents.
Everybody. Parents, the kid, sure, as a kid, you can trust your parents and say, well, are you sure? Like, it's a lot. It's not cut and dry, but I do think everybody needs to say, well, because they kept going. I read another article today from someone who allegedly came out and said that he was trying to recruit them into this. And the common theme was, okay, you know, we met, we talked. I went over his house, or when we talked on the phone, he was, you know, aggressive. He was sexually aggressive. I went back. I brought my friend. He was doing this. He was saying this. I went back. I went back. I went back. So it's hard to just straight up say R. Kelly is this person who, like, hypnotized these young women.
I mean, at some point, though, it's not that dissimilar of a concept of, I mean, why do people stay in abusive relationships?
Sure. Right.
There are power dynamics. There are people who have control, who feel like they can't do it because they are in this. They are trapped in this weird world. Right. They are. Sure. They are emotionally trapped. They are whatever the term is. It's, I don't know. I think it's a little more complicated.
It's definitely complicated. That I will agree with. Not at all cut and dry.
So the thing about stories like this is it's not like this is this is one story. There's been a lot of stories of R. Kelly over the years in a weird way. Like, I mean, to me, I asked before if he's done. It's almost like he's just accelerated the slope down to doneness. But I bet you he's still torn right now.
He can book a show.
Unbelievable. That'll be when it's over. When he can't book a show is when it's over.
I mean, because I remember there were videos that came out a few months ago where he's on stage still dry humping and letting women fill on him and grope him and, you know, like, he's still R. Kelly. So there's still going to be people much. I don't know if I want to compare it to this, but I'm just going to throw this in here. When at the height of the Chris Brownery, there are women who would say, and this is just disgusting, but there were women who would say he could beat me, where it didn't matter, or it was like a turn on. It was attractive. Like, it's a freaking rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Man, you want to talk about something light? Let's talk about something else, man.
Okay.
Let's talk about something incredibly inconsequential, but we're gonna give them credit on the show because we've been hard on them.
Okay, what is that?
We're going to give Tidal credit for fixing their app.
Yes.
Platform.
Every Day a Star is Born?
Which, yeah, I'm assuming you can only listen to. No, I'm just kidding.
Reasonable Doubt's the only one that's on Tidal. Right.
The spinning circle is no more.
Yeah, and it should have never been. That was so ugly.
I'm opening the app right now. I mean, it still's not. There are things about it that aren't exactly what I want, but it's way better. Way better. Way better.
Yep.
Speaking of Tidal, I just opened it, so I realized we haven't even talked. I don't even know if you listened to this. Did you hear this Puffy Biggie Rick Ross record?
Yeah, I heard it on the way home from work today.
Oh my goodness. Can we talk about this real quick?
Yeah. So you've heard it?
Oh yeah.
Okay, let's talk.
Nah. Just tell Puff to nah.
Yo, your man.
It's called We'll See. No.
Yeah, your man took You'll See. Or was it? It's called something else, right?
Well, yeah, it's actually called. It's called What You're Gonna Do.
Yeah.
But no, it's called You'll See.
Yep.
And it's from, like, what, 1995, right?
Yeah, that's when the original came out. Yep.
What?
So,
is there a story behind this?
Yeah, I don't know. This is weird. Okay, first of all, leave Biggie alone. Please. Right. To the Rick Ross and Biggie dynamic. That's over. That's over. Give me a Bugatti Boys album. You didn't give me that, so I'm good. Just let Ross be Ross. Remember Victory 2004?
Yeah.
And remember how they took the beat and they just unnecessarily, like, tried to make it bigger?
Yes.
That's what they did with You'll See. And it does not work at all. Though Puff's verse isn't bad.
Puff's verse isn't bad. This Biggie verse has been heard before.
Yeah, of
course. Apparently, there's a remix of this where they're rapping over Nothing But a G Thing.
What? Why?
Because he was the guest DJ on OVO Sound this week.
Oh, right. I wonder, how did that happen?
I mean, you know, first you get into altercation with somebody at a club, then next thing you know, you're on the radio show.
Listen, man, if somebody slapped me, the last thing I want them to do is to play songs on my radio show. Right. But, you know, that should be in Puff.
So what's weird is this kind of came out, but like No Way Out 2 is still sort of maybe floating out there. But
huh? What?
Yeah, that's supposedly possibly happening.
Nah.
You're not ready for No Way Out 2?
Streets ain't ready? They're definitely not.
No, they're not on fire.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's like, who's writing for him right now?
I don't know. That's the first thing I thought of when I was listening to that verse. I was like, who's writing now?
Right.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Do you like the song?
No.
Okay.
It's not terrible, but I don't need it. That's the problem. Yeah, I don't need it. What about you?
Yeah, no. It's like, okay, so I don't know. To me, like, why not just have the locks on it then? Like,
yeah,
give them a look right now.
Yeah,
I mean, are they on the inevitable remix? I'm not really sure, but like,
I mean,
no, really, I don't know. It's just a weird. It's like, okay, so bringing this back, I get it, kind of. Except it's not a new. So they're really just tapped out of big verses, right? I mean, 100%. If the Faith album didn't confirm, oh my goodness.
Oof. Yeah, because she used every big verse they had.
Right. That's. I mean, there's nothing. I don't think there's anything left. So recycled big verses over beats we've heard before. Oh, why? Yeah, not really sure.
Oof.
Yeah, no good. But speaking of folks trying to bring back 95 Bad Boy.
Oh, God.
Your man, Skyzoo.
My man, Skyzoo.
Can we talk about this?
Friend of the show. Yes.
Friend of the show?
Yes.
When did that happen?
I made him a friend.
Oh, you made him an honorary friend of the show?
We didn't discuss this.
I was going to say.
I just made that executive decision.
So, is this an EP, an album?
Yeah, this is an EP to set up his album that comes out in, I believe, September or October.
Okay, so the EP is called Peddler Themes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you are Mr. Skyzoo when it comes to the show.
I am 100%.
You are Team Skyzoo. So how did you feel about this? Do you want to talk about the album or talk about the song first?
Maybe we just talk about the whole project, but we can focus. I mean, 95 Bad Boy logo is crazy. That Faith sample is ridiculous.
The Faith sample's great. I will give him credit for that.
I'm not crazy about the drum switch in the middle.
I'm not. There's a couple things I'm not crazy about. Number one, I mean, the bass line really needs, like, it, to feel right, that bass line's not correct. Number two, how do you not bring Puff back for that hook?
I mean, he. There's subtle Puff Daddy ad-libs at the end.
Yeah, but have, I mean, anyway.
Puff probably costs too much.
Just.
That's the budget.
That's the budget right there. This song was good. 95 Bad Boy logo is cool.
Here's the thing with you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love when you tell me about me.
You already aren't the biggest Skyzoo fan. And Sky reminds me of somebody else that we're going to talk about on the show, where Sky does one thing and Sky is never going to do anything outside of that one thing.
Mm.
And for those who want that one thing, it works. For those who aren't looking for that one thing, they're cool.
It's just one thing. And I think you're cool. That's got me tripping. And you're right. Like, you're right. He has his lane. He fills it admirably. Am I crazy? You tell me, you listen to more Skyzoo than I do. I was listening to this and French Montana on the train down to New York yesterday. I was in extra heavy New York City mode. I just needed some Tim's.
I say, did you have an Avirex?
Does he always pay this much homage to classic flows?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I'm sitting here listening to this and I was like, you know, the first time I was like, okay, I get it. You know, then it was like two or three more times and I'm like, this is only 8 tracks long. And, you know, the arms start crossing and I'm like, you know.
Yeah. That's Sky's thing. Sky is a big 90s guy. He's a big Jay-Z guy, Biggie guy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so you're going to hear, I mean, he did a whole Ode to Reasonable Doubt.
Right.
So you're going to hear that a lot. So much so that I don't hear it until you point it out.
It's just, you're so used to it.
Yeah, I'm just used to it.
It's funny because, like, you know, his feel is so, I mean, this sounds like an EP full of, like, recreated mid-90s album cuts.
Sure.
Which, for the right fan, they're like, yes, how do I get that?
Yeah.
But I think it's like because of the nostalgia in some ways, I'm hearing this and I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I've heard that flow. And in a weird way, I'm almost like expecting him to like carry it on and then like link it into the, I'm looking like Russell Crowe in Reasonable Mind. Beautiful Mind, where I'm like, I'm like, okay, well, if he's going to carry this part of the flow on, should he link it in with this? And I'm like, I'm doing the thing where I'm like, well, he should carry the rhyme scheme. You know, he made me get extra lyrical miracle on the train.
Here I go.
this is fine. There's nothing on here that is bad. Everything here flows and vibes nicely. It's 8 tracks, not long. You can run through it a couple times.
Yeah.
Is it safe to say if you are not a Skyzoo fan, this is not, if you've heard Skyzoo and you're not like a big Skyzoo fan, this is not going to change your mind.
No. I think Sky has his audience and I don't think Sky is trying to cater to anybody else.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think that's fine too, because there's another artist that we're going to talk about today who to me fills that exact same void.
Should we talk about him right now?
We can.
Let's talk about your man Meek Mill. How did I know where you were going? We didn't rehearse that. That's the best part.
That's hilarious. Yeah, let's talk Meek, man.
Let's talk about Meek.
Wins and losses.
This is 17 tracks.
17 freaking tracks. What happened to, hold on, before then, what happened to Dream Chasers 4.5? Where is that?
I have no idea. This feels like it was a little under the radar. Am I crazy?
For him coming off of the biggest battle of the last 5 years, very big hip hop story. Sure, you could say that, but I didn't much think about that.
Okay. I don't know. I felt like, yeah, it felt a little, I guess I was, you know, I know Whatever You Need is the single, but I was like, wait, is there like a big like Meek single? And I guess it's Whatever You Need. I don't know. It's, felt like I felt like this kind of caught me off guard, but I'm admittedly not always 100% looking out for Meek Mill.
And at one time we were.
Right.
We were huge Meek fans on this show.
So
we were ready.
We are not going to go track by track on this.
No.
There are some things I would like to talk about.
Sure. Let's do it.
Am I crazy or is he experimenting with auto-tune on here?
He was experimenting with auto-tune. He's been doing that for a minute.
This really felt, I was like, okay. Here's the weird thing. I actually kind of like Meek with autotune. You know why?
Why?
Because it's hard to shout with autotune.
Okay. I won't disagree with that.
And it's something different. Because otherwise, some of these, like, all right, connect the dots.
Yeah.
With Yo Gotti and Rick Ross.
Yeah.
This song could be from 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It could also be from 2017.
Yes.
When you say somebody was changed, Meek Mill has not changed one bit.
Yeah.
The only difference really is now Ross has decided he wants to try to use his pseudo Jack from Biggie relaxed flow on hype beats too, which is kind of he's not yelling anymore, but Meek is still yelling.
Yeah.
Does anything here stick out to you?
On this album? No. Yeah.
How'd you feel about Young Black America? First of all, how are there two producers listed for this?
Well, you chop the drums and I'll chop the sample. We'll do it together. It'll be like both of ours. We'll just keep it in my house.
What did Street Symphony do?
Don't get me started on Street Symphony.
Oh.
Not a friend of the show at all.
Not a friend of the show?
Not at all.
Okay.
He's responsible for the fake blackballing after we reviewed Gravity.
Do I need to cut that out? Do I need to make a try?
No. No, don't cut it out.
Okay. Young Black America. First, I was like, oh, no. At first, I was like, oh, are they going to sample this? Like, do something different with it? And I was like, no, he's just going to rap over it. And then I was like, oh, here comes Tarius. Aw, Tarius.
He's like he's the pseudo deep introspective hook guy now.
He's the Rock Nation on call. We need the hook. Are you a Rock Nation artist? We've got a hook for you. And we're Tarius fans in the show.
100%. He's in the contract. He's a part of the courting process. Do you like the dream? We've got a hook for you. This could be yours if you sign your name on the dotted line.
There's some things about this that kind of surprised me.
What's that?
I found myself a lot of the, so he's got some of these young guys on the album, right? He's got Quavo, he's got Uzi, he's got, Thug's not that young anymore. But he's doing it with the kids.
I think Meek has done a great job of embracing the youths without coming off as the old head.
Here's what's weird to me. Like, because I will give Meek credit. There are a couple of notable, like, oh, that sounds like a Meek Mill record. Now, they're not always my favorite because, like, when I hear a Meek Mill style record on a Rick Ross album, I'm always like, oh, it's super, it's a trap record, except we're going to cram in as much as we possibly can. Because Meek doesn't like sort of, he wants a lot of percussion. It's because to him, that's energy, right? That's what he likes to rap over. But then he's also yelling over it. So it's like, oh. But ironically, like the record with Future, like Future on a Meek Mill type record is kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting because I don't hear that much anymore, right?
Yeah.
Or, honestly, even Uzi, like Uzi was, I had no problem with Uzi on this.
Yeah.
It's just kind of interesting. I was like, huh, okay. So like sort of adapting a little bit of like the new style, but trying it over that typical frenetic kind of Meek Mill record. And I'm like, that actually kind of works. I wasn't terribly mad at it.
Yeah.
I expected to have my arms crossed when Uzi Vertical was on, but no. I mean, aside from the song being dumb, like, Uzi was serviceable. It was totally fine. I didn't hate it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about this album. Again, the reason why I used the Sky Zoo comparison is that what Meek does, Meek's style, Meek does it really, really well. I saw conversations that asked the question, well, is Meek back? Like, well, I mean, the music never really dipped. If we go through his discography, sure, there are certain projects that are better than others, but Meek is always consistently giving you Meek. He may have tried a few things, few radio records, especially the last album, the Nicki records. And of course, I mean, you're dating a pop star. She's, of course, going to try and get you into that realm. So that makes sense. But I didn't hear anything on here that made me say, wow, Meek, what are you doing? Like, you bugging out right now? Nah, it's a solid Meek Mill project. So people who are happy with it, I totally get it.
The thing to me that's interesting is, like, if you pull up the list of producers on this project and compare it to the producers on Dreams Worth More Than Money, which was his last actual album. And it's like, there are definitely, like, producers on here we've heard of. It's not like it's a totally, like, but, there's a whole lot of people on here where I'm like, this is, like, the B team, or this is not the... Like, that last album, he went to Drake for the, he got the Drake stimulus package on Rico.
Sure.
But, Metro, Bangladesh with Swiss Beats, Boy Wanda, he got the Weekend record. He had Puff on a record.
That's right. That's when he, what was that terrible Puff record that Meek wrote? I Want the Love. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. But like, this is almost it's not that dissimilar from what I saw when you look at the the Wale list of who worked on Wale's last project, which is to sort of say, you go, budget's a little smaller.
Yeah.
Things are a little different.
Yeah.
Because like the generally speaking, like this feels like a record Meek could have made 5 years ago. It feels like, I think you're right, Meek is kind of where he's at. I mean, the record with Uzi really kind of stuck with me just because, like, Uzi's a kid, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And so when he makes a record called F That Checkup, like, all right, like, when you're young, you do, you know, you rap, that's, you know, and you're getting money for the first time, like, that's what you're going to rap about.
Yeah.
Meek is 30. Like,
well, okay, so here
some
we go.
Point, at some point, you still rapping about this same stuff? Like, I know he's got a chip on his shoulder. I get that. But it's got to go away at some point, right? Am I looking too deep into this?
Here's this. Because you're not wrong. I like for my rappers to have some substance and see them grow. And so I didn't listen to the whole interview, but I was just kind of skimming over some of his interviews. And he talked about hearing 444. And I believe he had some conversations with Jay, and he's more encouraged to, he's now into properties and real estate and, you know, investing. So I think it's one of those rapper things that people get caught up in where hip hop is afraid to grow up. Because when they do grow up, then it's getting my grown man on, grown man. Listen, if you are an adult calling yourself a grown man, you are not grown. It's just life. So,
but what if you're grown and sexy?
Exactly. Exactly. So, I think Meek is facing a really interesting situation where he is exposed to this new life. You know, it's a public breakup. He took this huge L last year. And those of us who have lived life, we understand that losses are, you know, setups for success. And so you had to take some L's in order to get the W. And so you are learning that, but on one hand, maybe you're not ready to rap about it. And then number two, maybe you still want to F a checkup. And then number three, you know, you've always been the guy to have cars and jewelry and whatever, whatever. And now you're going to go from that to look at how people applauded Jay-Z for doing that. It was almost like him stepping out on faith. Okay, like, I have to rap about this because, you know, like, there has to be a level of peace that you have with where you are in life in order to rap about those things, especially being in the environment that you were. Or on the flip side, you could actually see that that's a hustle, being anti what everybody else is doing, which is partly what I think Jay did. So maybe Meek's just not ready yet. Maybe the next album we get, you know, real estate knowledge and all that. Or maybe Meek is just afraid of showing maturity, because he's always been the F a checkup guy.
I think that's a good point. So,
I don't know, man.
We talked briefly about it. The lead single, Whatever You Need, with Chris Brown and Ty Dolla, produced by Mustard. When I heard this, I was like, didn't Big Sean make this song?
with the Jodeci sample?
Right, with the guy called Play No Games.
Or not Jodeci, guy.
Yeah, opinion. It's like, didn't he already make this song with Chris Brown and Ty Dolla, pretty much? But I don't know. How do you feel about Whatever You Need?
I liked it better when it was Play No Games. Play No Games is the better record.
Yeah.
I'm good. Like, I don't want chick records from Meek.
It's funny. When I was listening to it, I was actually...
Girl records, excuse me.
No. Is it Fall Through? Yeah. When I heard Fall Through, I was like, wow, Meek really made a chick record.
Yeah. It just doesn't feel right, right?
And so to explain, if this is your first time listening, welcome. We refer to it as the chick record because the stereotype for a long time, but it used to be really heavily prevalent, was you had this, you know, really hard, thugged out rapper, and to show the softer side, you made the quote unquote chick record. And
yeah,
we're using that in an ironic, sort of pseudo ironic
yes.
sense.
Yes.
But yeah, I was like, I heard Fall Through. I was like, really?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's where you went with that?
Yeah, 100%.
Meek is Meek. Like,
yep.
You and I have talked about Rick Ross, right? And how, like, Rick Ross just kind of has settled into, like, what he does. There are lots of artists who do this, right?
Yes.
But yeah, I think Meek is just kind of Meek at this point.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Was there anything else on here that like that stuck out to you?
No. And like hearing this album, it was all like, you know, it was cool Meek Mill music, but like there's no record for me that was like, yo, like even DC4 had like the On the Regular was dope. The Difference was dope. I liked Way Up. So there's records on every Meek project where I'm like, yo, like this record, like these records are cool. Lord know on Dreams Worth More Than Money. Lord knows, classic. A lot of people like Jump Out the Face.
Oh, Jump Out the Face is crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so there's records on every Meek project that are extreme standouts. But on this project, I didn't really get that. I didn't really get that. It's not that any of it was bad. It wasn't whack. There were just no standouts to me. And maybe that's what you do. Maybe you just play it safe. He's getting back into people's good graces. You know, people are ready to, you know, quote unquote, forgive him, even though he didn't do anything to anybody. And so maybe that's what you do. So maybe you come back and, you know, you kill him later. I'm not sure.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.